So where are you from? Virginia. Where are you from? Massachusetts. Where are you from?
Michigan.
So as James said earlier, whenever we're asked this question, we immediately go to the geography, right? That makes the most sense. The place is so much more than just a spot on the map, isn't it?
There were some ladies talking in the narthex between services, and they were saying,
oh yeah, you know, my mother's voice, that's place to me. That takes me right back to a place. And then another person was saying, oh yeah, when I bite into a Philadelphia cheesesteak, I'm right there. That's place. That's definitely place. And so place is not just latitude and longitude. It is a warm, moonlit night. It is barn owls and endless rows of books in the public library. It is a community and the history of all of its struggles. It's the conversations that you have over the backyard fences and in the pews that make you feel right at home, or sometimes remind you that you really don't belong there. Where are you from? I am from clothespins, from Clorox and carbon tetrachloride. I am from the dirt under the back porch, black and glistening. It tastes like beets. I am from the forsythia bush and the Dutch elm, whose long limbs I remember as if they were my own. I am from fudge and eyeglasses, from Imogene and Allafair. I'm from know-it-alls and pass-it-ons, from perk-up and pipe-down. I am from he restoreth my soul with a cotton ball lamb and 10 verses I can say by myself. I am from Artemis and Billy's branch, fried corn and strong coffee, from the finger my grandfather lost in the auger and the eye my father shut to keep his sight. Under my bed was a dress box, spilling old pictures, a sift of lost faces to drift beneath my dreams. I am from those moments, snapped before I budded, leaf fall from the family tree. This wonderful poem is written by George Ella Lyon. She grew up in the mountains of Kentucky, and she knew that place is much more than just a spot on the map. It is the bend in a river. It is the reliable yellow blooms of forsythia. It is the collected history and traditions of all of the people who have ever lived in that place and called it home. Does this resonate with you? Does anybody feel like it's a little bit overly sentimental, a little overly romantic, maybe old-fashioned even, a little bit? I wondered the same thing. I mean, the poem is beautiful, but I wondered if there was a place for this kind of sentimental portrait of place in today's ultra-mobile society. Technology now lets us move around so easily. I mean, you can be thousands of miles away and still be connected to your family and to your work. Technology lets us explore different parts of the world without ever getting up off the couch. You can expand your vision and open up your mind. You can open up your mind to different places that you have never been before and imagine a completely different life for yourself in a different place. Think about way back in the olden days when people didn't have the freedom to move around. You were born in a particular place and you stayed in that place until you died. You would be stuck in that place and you would have very little hope of moving, even if that place didn't suit you very well. So maybe all this mobility thing is a good thing, right? What do you think? To be mobile, a mobile society, is it a good thing? Yeah? I'm seeing people going, well, yes and no, yes and no. I think something is definitely lost when people are not invested in knowing the place where they stand. When we think of place as just a location on a map, just a geographical location, we tend to live on the surface of that place, and we don't ground ourselves into the living soil, you know, deep into a place. I wonder what holds us back. What keeps us from digging deep and sinking our roots into the ground? I mean, isn't that a basic human longing? To be connected to the place we live? Isn't it a basic human longing to be rooted and grounded? Yes? Yeah. So why are so many of us not grounded and not rooted to place? You know, Americans are the most mobile people in the world. According to the Census Bureau, Americans move on the average of 11 times in their lifetime. And that's compared to 5 times with the Brits and 4 times with the Japanese. How many people have moved more than 11 times? Wow! You're above average. But I knew that already. Well, I would think that in the Hampton Roads area, there would be more mobile people than in other places. So we move for jobs. We move because the government tells us to. We move for better schools. We move for bigger houses, better tax rates. We move for a fresh start. We move to reinvent ourselves and to experience something new. We move to have an adventure. The environmental activist Terry Tempest Williams once said that maybe something that's even more adventurous and something that takes more courage and maybe is even more radical is to stay put, just to stay home. Stay home so that we can learn the names of the plants and the animals around us. Stay home so that we can begin to know what tradition we're a part of. Does that sound radical to you? Staying put? When people live on the surface of a place, either because they don't stay long enough to sink deeper, or because they don't really see any value in going beneath the surface, then it becomes easier to desecrate a place. The cultural and natural heritage of a place then is more easily forgotten and lost. Neighborhoods are allowed to deteriorate. Landscapes are allowed to be strip mined. Trees are allowed to be cleared for yet another retail store that no one needs. Burial sites that were once holy are paved over for parking lots. Sacred lands, once used for rituals, are dug up and used for retaining ponds. The poet Gary Snyder claims that one of the key problems in American society now is that people lack a sense of commitment to any given place. The reconstruction of a people, he says, and of a life in the United States depends in part on people deciding to stick it out, neighborhood by neighborhood, county by county, deciding to stay and make it work where they are rather than flee. I think I'm part of the problem that he talks about, because I tell you, I could not wait to get out of Ohio. I'm sorry to our guests from Ohio. But when I was 15 growing up in Toledo, I couldn't wait to leave and never come back. And then after 10 years of urban pioneering in Baltimore, I couldn't wait to get out of the grime and crime of the city. And even when I moved to the sunny beaches of Florida, I couldn't live there. I guess I have a commitment problem or something. Or maybe I'm just one of those people who are kind of nomadic. And, you know, there are people who are wanderers, lovers of leaving, right? But I'm beginning to wonder if there's a cost in my life as well. So now that I'm getting older, I'm starting to think about what's ahead for me in my retirement and thinking about the places I might like to call home, like permanent, put down your roots, I'm not leaving kind of home, which I've really never had. A couple of months ago, I read a story in the paper of a small town in Washington state that was dying because the last known resident had passed away. And now it was an official ghost town. And I remember reading this article and wondering why people are getting so upset over this, why this was so sad. Because, you know, towns are born, they thrive, they decline, they die. Is this really a big deal? Is this really that sad? But then I realized that that response, my response, was coming from regarding a place as just a point on the map, just a place where people drive in, drive out, people come, people go. And so if that town folds, then what's the big deal? But if I see this town as a community of people and creatures woven into the landscape and bound to the history of their ancestors, embedded into the mountains, then the death of a town is the disintegration of a community. And that is sad. That really is sad. Now, I know that not everybody stays in place because they are committed to rootedness. A lot of people stay because they have no other choice. The people who leave tend to be the ones with the resources, right? In every state, you can find towns that are essentially abandoned. Lake County, Michigan is one of them. More than 60% of the homes in that town are vacant. No one lives there anymore. The people who were able to leave have long gone. And so who stays? Well, 2,000 people all living under the poverty line. No industry, no real jobs left, very little hope. It's the American way, I guess. I guess, you know, you have to take care of yourself and your own, right? It's counterculture and counterintuitive to stay put for the good of the collective, right? For the good of the town. But I just wonder what it might be like. I mean, what if all those people in Lake County stayed? What if they all stayed and shared their resources? What if they stayed and tried to figure out how to bring jobs back to their town, how they could feed their neighbors, how they could educate their children? What would that be like? Just outside of Tulsa, Oklahoma, is another similar town. It's called Turley, Oklahoma. In the 1960s, white families left in droves, driven by fear and prejudice. And coupled with the departure of the oil industry jobs, Turley has nearly been abandoned. Many houses are vacant, some are boarded up, others are slowly falling down. The once busy Main Street is now just one gas station and a pizza joint and a dry cleaners. Most younger residents have no health insurance and no access to health care. And most of the children qualify for free lunch. Unemployment in Turley, Oklahoma is twice the national average. Here in the midst of this place, someone has decided to stay. Someone has decided to stick it out. And he is the Reverend Ron Robinson, a Unitarian Universalist minister who has formed a ministry called Third Place. Third Place. Third Place is kind of a mix of community center and part public library, part closed shelter and food bank. Reverend Robinson's goal is to become embedded in the life of the larger community. Embedded, rooted, planted deep in the earth and in the lives of the people who live there. This is what it means to belong to a place, to stay put, and to be home. The name of Reverend Robinson's ministry, Third Place, comes from an urban sociologist named Ray Oldenburg. Third places, he says, are informal public places, like coffee houses and bars and public squares, places that are free or very inexpensive, where all the people are welcome and where you run into your neighbors. What are the third spaces in Williamsburg? Colonial Williamsburg, Dog Street.
WUU.
Hold on to that thought. Where are the public spaces?
Panera.
All the coffee houses. The library is a great public space. The trails. All the outdoor spaces. The parks. The rec center. So Oldenburg describes third places as the heart of the community and the foundation of a functioning democracy. First place is home. Second place is work. And third place is this public space that promotes social equality, provides a setting for grassroots politics, creates habits of public association. I love that. Habits of public association, and offers support to individuals and communities. So earlier this morning, someone was talking about their neighborhood and how it seemed like everybody just goes into their garages, into their cars, and then goes to work, and then comes home, and then goes into their garages and goes home, and they never see them out in the public space. Why is that? If we long for community and rootedness and connection, why are so many people avoiding the public association, avoiding public places? I know for a fact that there are lots and lots of young people, especially working people, who do that commute. Work, home, work, home, Trader Joe's, 7-Eleven, work, home, right? With this lifestyle, it's almost impossible to get grounded in your landscape. It's almost impossible to feel a sense of deep, deep belonging to a place, to a people, to their traditions, to their history. And now, Richard, back to what you said earlier, this place, WUU, is this a third place? It better be, he says. Is church, is the religious institution, private or public? Yes. You know, in many ways, this place is a first place. It feels in some ways like a private home. Our opening hymn, number one, certainly describes church as kind of a home, right? Rafters, sheltering walls, rooms, windows, hearth. May they be strong to keep hate out and love in. We've gotten so used to thinking about religious community as a nurturing, safe place where we can be with like-minded people and feel at home. And this is a really important role that we have as community, so that people like James and a lot of you can come here and feel at home. And I don't want to take that away from anyone. But I have to tell you that I don't feel that I was called to be a minister, to be the leader of a place, that place described in hymn number one. Love is not meant to be held inside these sheltering walls. Love was not meant to be held in. Community is not always safe and warm and fuzzy. It doesn't always feel nurturing, does it? It's hard work. Most of the time, community is difficult and challenging, and we enter into it voluntarily because we know that community is a discipline. Community is a spiritual discipline of putting our faith into real action. Life calls us into community, not for our sake, not to get our personal needs met, but for the sake of serving others. And so I wonder, Richard, what it would feel like if this place felt increasingly more and more like a third place. More and more and more. The current buzzword for this is missional. Missional. But the idea is as old as the first followers of Jesus. A missional congregation is one that focuses its ministries externally rather than internally. Rather than seeking to bring people in, we would go to them. Service to others would be our primary purpose, especially to those who are most vulnerable. The community would gather to support one another in the work. We would learn and teach. We would worship in order to be fed, refreshed, and inspired to then go out into the world again. We have started moving in this direction. In the last several years, we have definitely started moving outward. Later this spring and this summer, we're going to start having some serious conversations about possible facilities expansion. But the first thing that we need to talk about is about our place. Our place, not just on 3051 Ironbound Road, but also our place as stewards of these 8 acres, where the water runs and birds thrive and countless mammals live. Our place in this unusual neighborhood right here at Five Forks. Our place in Williamsburg with its changing demographics. Our place in Hampton Roads. And our place in history, the history of the free faith in Virginia. Let's see what happens to those conversations. May we be outward thinking, and may we always have a heart for service. Amen.